Chapter 9. Boy Alone. As long as he dared, Charlie waited in his thicket the next morning. Waited, tormented by smoke, until he saw the red of flames through stalks nearby. There was no safety for him here any longer. He crawled out of his refuge, leaving behind the clothing that would mark him as being from the Yankee Army. Once away from the shelter, the boy looked about him fearfully. The tent of the Confederate officer who had questioned him was gone. The Rebs had marched away. The clearing where he'd been seen General Lee on horseback was almost empty now, save for a dozen or so men in butternut brown who were occupied with a grisly task. Bodies of the rebel dead lay in a row on the trampled earth where they'd been dragged from the forest. As Charlie looked on from behind a tree, he saw two of the soldiers lift a corpse by its feet and arms and put it into a waiting wagon filled with other corpses. Charlie swallowed hard and backed away. What should he do? Where was he, anyhow? The officer had said he should go to the west, but which way was west from here? Barely visible above the smoky, filtering handkerchief tied about his face, Charlie's forehead creased with thought. He marched with the 140th down the Germana Plank Road, which he knew ran north and south. Then he turned at Wilderness Tavern onto another road, the Orange Turnpike. It had run in another direction for the Germana Road, so it had to run east to west. The Johnny Reb, who had captured him, must have taken him south to join up with the Confederate troops coming north from the town of Orange. It seemed to Charlie that he must somehow find the Orange Turnpike again. But how could he do that? There was only one answer. Head in the direction from which the Texas Brigade had been attacking yesterday. But how to do that without being seen and recaptured? And what if he got lost again, as he had before with his regiment? Lost alone in the wilderness? Mother Mary, no! Charlie looked behind him. No one was looking toward him. If he moved swiftly and quietly, and took advantage of the foul-scented smoke wafting over the clearing, he might be able to make it into the forest unnoticed. Yes, he'd go. He'd risk it. He had no other choice. Bending low, Charlie ran forward, sheltering behind every tree, every bit of undergrowth, and drift of smoke. He made it unseen to the thickest trees that fringed the clearing. In a moment, he was among them, moving as fast as he could away from the clearing. Once in the trees, he sat down to catch his breath. Now, which direction should he take? He wanted to go north to find the Turnpike Road, but what would he find there if he did? The Union Army? More important, though, which way was north? Charlie thought of something now that had not seemed important at the time. Sister Mary Michael had once told his class something a long time ago when they were studying botany. She said that moss grew on the north side of the tree. If she said so, it had to be true. Charlie got up and began to hunt for moss on the young trees around him. It took a bit of searching, but in time he found one with moss on its trunk. Beyond it lay two others. Charlie made his way, tree by tree, ever deeper into the smoky wilderness. He avoided fires and bypassed swamps and waded the creeks, always moving as silently and stealthily as he could. Sometimes he saw men in gray and butternut brown moving in the smoky distance, and then he froze, hiding in the brush, until they had gone on seeking bodies. He saw dead men, too, a pair of Confederates and a few Union soldiers, sometimes lying close together like slumbering comrades, sometimes far apart. A Yankee sergeant lay face down, as if clutching the earth. A Johnny Reb, equally stiff in death, lay on his back, looking with surprise up at the trees, where smoke mingled with the blue skies. One soldier in butternut brown lay half in, half out of an oozing swamp creek. Charlie shuddered. He needed water, but he dared not fill his nearly empty canteen here in the wilderness. He knew what he must do. Gritting his teeth, fighting nausea, Charlie went to each of the dead soldiers in turn, hunting for the man's canteen. Two had no canteens with them. Other thirsty men had taken them before Charlie Quinn came. Another had left little left in his, and that of the fourth soldier was bone dry. The Yankee who lay face down had his canteen under his body. To get it, Charlie had to use the knife he'd brought from the Bowery to cut the leather strap that held it. Pulling on one end of the strap, he still couldn't get the canteen loose. At last, the tears of horror brimming his eyes, Charlie set his feet against the man's heavy body and jerked with all his might. The blood-stained canteen came free with a rush that bowled the boy over onto his back. Charlie scrambled to his feet, shaking all over. He jiggled the canteen to hear its sound. It was half full. Charlie stayed near the dead soldier long enough to whisper to him, "I'm sorry. I have to have it, though. Thank you." Then he ran to a tree broader than the others, giving him more cover, and behind it poured the contents of the sergeant's brown-stained canteen into his own. For the first time that day, Charlie drank, and then used a little liquid to moisten his handkerchief. A moment later, steeling himself again, he went back to the Yankee to hunt in the man's haversack for food. All he could find was hard tack, and he took that, broke it into fragments, and put it into his pockets. Munching crumbs of the biscuits, Charlie started out again, striking north. In the distance, he saw other men moving now, blue-coat ones. They, too, were looking for bodies. Charlie avoided them with the care he'd used with the Johnny Rebs. Once somebody hailed him with a shout. Charlie didn't reply. He slid under a fallen log, sharing the space with a host of crawling beetles, till he figured the man had given up and gone about his business. Then he started out once more. Several hours of walking brought him at last to the Orange Turnpike. Charlie stumbled out of a dense growth of trees, and there it was in front of him, the road that 2 days before had swarmed with foot soldiers and echoed to the hoofbeats of cavalry. It was now smoky but deserted. There certainly must have been fighting on this stretch of road. Treetops were shorn off the sign of cannon fire, and the edge of the road was trampled on both sides, showing that the wagons and cavalry had passed along it. But there was nobody now, nothing living, save two hawks making great circles in the hot blue sky. West! The officer had said to go west, so Charlie walked out onto the turnpike and started warily down it, his eyes searching ahead and behind, his ears always alert to the slightest sound. In mid-afternoon he heard the sound of a horse's hoofs. An army courier? No, messengers rode at a gallop, and this was a slow clopping of hoofs, with the creaking of wheels audible above it. Charlie left the turnpike for the shelter of trees, and knowing himself to be screened from view, waited. Soon he saw an old wagon and a bony sorrel horse approaching in the smoky distance. The wagon was driven by an ancient black man in a long, dark coat and shapeless light yellow hat. This was no army wagon, to say the least. Remembering Big Marcus back in Culpeper, Charlie was not afraid. He pulled down his handkerchief, left his hiding place, and ran down onto the road, waving his arms. Startled, the black man reined in his horse. He looked on in surprise as Charlie came running to him. "Are you going to the west, too?" Charlie asked him. The old man didn't speak. He only stared as the boy repeated his question. Then Charlie pointed to the west. Perhaps the old man was deaf. Charlie pointed again, nodded, then pointed to himself. At that moment there came a dull booming sound in the far distance. Cannon fire. The fighting was still going on somewhere. Both Charlie and the old man jumped at the sudden noise. So he wasn't deaf, thought Charlie. When the booming ceased, the old driver nodded. He said, "I am headed near to the mountains." Charlie asked, "Will you give me a ride? I'll pay you if you'll take me." Once more the black man stared, then he grinned and nodded again. Next he patted the place on the seat next to him. "That's right," Charlie exclaimed, "I want a ride," and he climbed up over the wheel into the wagon seat. After thanking his benefactor, the boy introduced himself and told the man that he came from New York City. The old man was a dandy listener. He never once interrupted, and he appeared to listen closely. He'd look intensely at Charlie, who, because he felt encouraged, talked on and on about the Bowery Boys and Broadway and Johnny and Irene, about everything except the battle he'd run from and the Union Army. By late afternoon, Charlie was talked out, and the old man had yet to say another word, though he had continued to look often and questioningly at the boy. So they creaked along in silence through countryside that seemed almost drained of life. Ahead of the wagon, growing ever nearer, rose the Blue Ridge Mountains, a barrier Charlie knew he must cross to get to the west. At sunset, a wild black and gold and red one because of the smoke, the old man pulled his horse to a halt where a narrow road bisected the turnpike. He turned to Charlie, pointed to the narrow road, and said, "Ah, goes down here now." Charlie nodded. He'd have to walk again. Well, he was grateful for the ride. He reached into his pocket and gave the old man 15 cents, which he figured he owed him. The old black man took only a 5-cent piece and handed the rest back to the boy. Though he didn't want to take it, Charlie did. He might need it. He had $10.20. Although he'd been paid his $13 the first of the month, he'd bought peppermints and a $3 harmonica in Culpeper. It had fallen out of his pocket somewhere in his wild dash away from the battle. Getting down, Charlie stood at the sorrel's bridle and said, "Thank you. It was sure nice of you to take me along with you." He waited for the man to say something. At last he did. First he shook his head, and slowly he said, "Boy, I never did understand hardly one word you was saying to me. I listen hard, too. Where in the world do you come from where folks talk like you do?" Leaving Charlie open-mouthed with astonishment, the old man clucked to his horse and reined it to the left, leaving the main road. Staring after him, Charlie told himself that he had clearly told the man he hailed from New York City. He was thunderstruck to think his accent couldn't be understood by everyone. Charlie sighed. If this was the way it was down here, what would it be like in the mountains? Now that he was alone again, Charlie felt the bad memories of the day before crowding in on him again. His shoulders drooped as he started off on foot to where the mountains were jutting blackly against the sky. What he needed now was a place to sleep in safety for the night. Just before dark, he spied a house, a cabin, really, down a road that ran to the right. It had not been burned, as so many houses had, and it looked deserted. Charlie scouted the cabin carefully, circling it, but no one came out. Finally, he opened the front door and went inside. Knife in hand, he searched the place. It was abandoned and held nothing in the way of furnishings at all. Charlie chose his sleeping place with care. He lay down on the floor near the back door, ready to leap up and run out of the rear if anyone came to the house. He was learning what he had already guessed, that the life of a deserter here in Virginia wasn't going to be an easy one. Once he'd crossed the mountains out of this state and was away from the war, he ought to be able to breathe easier and find a place where the fighting wasn't apt to come. A place where nobody would ever suspect he was a skedaddling Union Army drummer boy. There he would call himself Charlie Quinn again. As he curled up to sleep, he told himself that tomorrow he'd have to start climbing. He would need tonight's rest. He hoped he wouldn't dream of the dead Confederate he shot, or relive the battle as he had the last two nights.